Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. All right, it's 5 o'clock here in the Bayou City. All right, let's head down south a little bit, down around Port O'Connor, and check in with our good friend, Captain Lynn Smith, see what's up. Good morning, Lynn. What's up?
Well, getting ready to head down to the ranch and see if we can't harvest a few more does.
And, y'all got to kill off a bunch of does this week, huh?
Yeah, well, we're going to pop a few more. But anyway, looks like I may load my truck and probably take a bunch of sunscreen.
Yeah, it's going to warm up, man.
Oh, man, it's going to be in the 80s.
I know. Better hang them up quick.
Oh, gosh, I'm telling you. Get them back to the ranch house quick and get them in the cooler. You know, it's going to be warm, man. You know, I was down there one time a couple of years ago, and we were harvesting a few does, and I shot this doe. It was on the other side of the ranch, far side of the ranch, rather pretty close to the fence line. And anyway, I shot this big doe, and I got out of the stand, and no sooner did I get out of the stand, I looked up, and here came two dogs running up toward me, and it was a black lab and a pointer. And I thought, well, you know, we're close to the fence line, and this guy that had the ranch on the other side, I figured, well, maybe they're quail hunting over there. Well, anyway, these dogs ran up, and anyway I went and got the truck to come back and get this deer. When I came back, the pointer was gone and the lab was laying down beside my deer. And anyway I loaded the doe, and I told that dog, I said, go on home. You know, he just sat there. You know, he wouldn't leave. And I got in the truck and started driving off. He just started trotting right alongside the truck. and he wouldn't leave. And he wouldn't get in the truck. And he wouldn't leave me. And I said, heck, he's going to follow me all the way back to the ranch house. And we're on the very back side of this ranch. Yeah. And this ranch was 9,000 acres. And I said, man, it was pretty warm, too. And I stopped three different times at three different tanks and let him swim to cool him off. And I'd stop and let him swim and drink and all that. And I'd say, all right, you ready? Boy, he'd come over here, boy, and he was all excited. And I'd leave again, you know. And he followed me all the way back to the ranch house. And then I put him in a kennel, and he had a collar on him, but I never could get close enough to him to read the deal on the collar. So anyway, the ranch manager came down to the ranch, and he said, whose dog is that? And I said, man, I don't know. I can't read that collar. And he said, oh, that's old so-and-so's dog, you know, on the other side of the fence. I said, yeah, I'm sure it is. He said, I'll call him. So he called him and said, we got your dog. He said, well, I'll come get him, you know. Well, he showed up that night, knocked on the door at the ranch house and opened the door. And I said, well, I'm the one that stole your dog. I said, but he followed me all the way to the ranch house. He said, oh, man. He said, we're training him to track deer. You know, I said, well, he found one. He definitely found one, and he wasn't going to leave it alone. He just laughed.
Good dog.
Oh, man. Good dog. Man. He was a good lamb. Good lamb. But he
couldn't get him to load up in the truck.
No, he wasn't loading the truck. He wouldn't get in the truck.
Usually with a lamb, all you got to do is drop the tailgate, and they're in there. Just
I know. He would not get in the truck. he just trotted right along beside me, you know. And I just idled all the way back to the ranch house. But anyway, it was funny. He was a good dog, you know. But yeah, anyway, we've got to harvest a few more. And got to be careful because some of these bucks are dropping their horns.
Yeah, they are.
They're already dropping them. And
I said, yeah, look at that big doe. No, I believe that's a buck.
Well, I take my spotting scope, and I really look at them. You know, look at them hard, make sure they are a doe and not a buck.
Who was that that told me? Somebody told me a story one time. They were hunting, and they were shooting axes, and there was this huge axes. And when he shot it, there's the shock away from the bullet. When it hit the deer, it knocked the horns off of it.
I would be a bit surprised.
I think it was some guy said, oh, yeah, a taxidermist, he can fix that up for you, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had a guy like that. He was going to shoot this big axis, and the ranch manager had him all lined up to shoot this big axis, but he was inside the pen, you know. He said, well, wait till he gets outside. Well, that big axis jumped out of the feed pen, and when his front hooves hit the ground, both his horns fell off. He said, don't shoot him. Don't shoot him. You got his horns.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No, they're starting to shed their horns already.
Isn't that somehow, that's just so, I've always wondered how that works, you know, just... Here you are, you got this pretty set of horns you've been sporting all year and fighting other deer with it, and then they just fall off, and then you got to start all over again and grow you some more. That's crazy.
Yeah, and, you know, right now is when you need to really pump the protein to them, you know, when they start growing these new horns.
Right.
And we brought in a whole 18-wheeler load of protein this last week, and people don't realize how expensive it is to grow these deer.
Proteins, man, that's high dollar.
Well, they brought in an 18-wheeler load of protein, $8,000 worth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll eat that up quick. Boy, they go crazy over it. They'll eat it up like candy.
Oh, it's like candy to them. It really is.
Oh, man.
But now is when you got to feed them the protein, really. Right. When they're growing their horns. And they just love it. I mean, you're sitting there pouring that protein in those feeders, you got that auger going, you know, that motor's running, and,
right.
And you got that hose in that feeder, and it's filling those feeders, and you look around, those deer are standing there 35, 40 yards from you, just watching, you know, just watching you fill the feeder.
Yeah, and they can smell that stuff a mile away.
Oh, yeah. As soon as you put everything up and everything, and you jump back in the truck and you're driving off, you look back and they're running to the feeder, you know, licking their lips, man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's why Blaine said them quail were acting after that cold spell. Once all the, you know, the ice kind of went away a little bit and everything, he loaded up his quail feeders and on his truck and was quailing all the Senderos and feeding them. And he said you'd look behind the truck and they're just running out, just covey after covey, jumping on that food, man. They were hungry.
Oh, I bet.
You know, after that cold snap.
Yep. Yeah, I bet. Yeah, this friend of mine has a ranch at the Creso Springs. And he said, man, he said, one of his partners, he has a couple of partners on that ranch. And one of them wanted to bring a bunch of elk in there. Well, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
He brought some elk in there and they just lay down there by the feeders. They won't want to leave the feeders. And they just sit there and hoover that protein until the feeders run out. And then when they run out, they just knock the feeders over, you know.
Yeah.
They just knock them over. And I never forget, man, he told me one time, he said, I went up there and I was going to shoot some does and some cull bucks for him. And he said, let me tell you something. He said, there's an old raghorn elk that hangs out at this one stand. He said, if you see him, shoot him and get him off the ranch. I don't even want to know about it. You just get him out of here. He's tearing up my feeders, man. But I never saw him. I never saw the elk. But he said, oh, man, he's tearing up my feeders bad. Yeah, he just kind of, he's beds down right there at the feeder. won't leave. I said, I believe it. Oh, man. They just lay there and get fat. Eat up all the protein.
Well,
there's something. Yeah, we drove up on that, driving on that ranch, and we were quail hunting. We were driving along, these elk were standing there. And you stop the truck, and they'd come walking over and stick their noses right in the window, you know, thinking you're going to feed them. Big old elk, big horns on them. Crazy.
Well,
same thing happened down in Refurio. And same deal on a ranch down there. And, boy, they'd walk right up to your truck. And, you know, I said, man, I've hunted in Colorado, New Mexico, Idaho, all kinds of places. Never shot one. And here they walk right up to your truck, you know. Oh, my goodness. I hunted all those other states, saw a lot of elk. I just never saw one I wanted to shoot.
Right.
Because, boy, when you pull the trigger on one, then the work starts, you know.
Well, you get a giant one. A buddy of mine got a giant one and had a full shoulder mount and all that mounted. And that's a major ordeal, finding a wall to put it on.
Oh, a friend of mine killed one. He had to take a picture window out in his living room so he could get the elk in, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
big animal.
Oh, they are.
Huge rack like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hunted New Mexico one time. We hunted up almost on the Colorado border. And we trailered horses and mules up there. And the snow snowed 4 days straight, never stopped. And the snow was belly deep on the horses. And horses did not like that.
I bet they didn't.
It was rubbing on their bellies. And we were working our way down the side of one of these mountains. To go to this meadow, and all of a sudden, this buddy of mine was in front, and I was behind him, and he stopped, and I looked over to the right, and there was a 6x6 bull standing there looking at us, about 50 yards from us, and my buddy was reaching for his rifle in a scabbard, and he was starting to pull his rifle out of the scabbard, and that bull just turned and took about two steps, and he was in that dark timber and gone, you know. And I eased my horse up to him, and I said, you weren't going to shoot that elk off your horse, were you? And he said, yeah, I was going to shoot him and get my elk, and I figured you'd get my horse. I said, yeah. And that's about the way it would have been, too.
I promise you.
Oh, yeah. Because those horses had never been shot over. And I figured that's probably what would have happened, too.
No, that wouldn't have been a good thing. Well, at least he had soft snow to fall in.
Yeah. Deep snow.
Deep snow. Man, belly deep on a horse, that's a lot.
Oh,
let me do
was.
This break, Lynn. Hang on a second. I'll be right back at you, buddy.
All right.
All right, folks, if you're looking for the ultimate outdoor adventure, well, welcome to Rusty Hook Ranch. It's a premier hunting and fishing destination in right in Matagorda, Texas. And whether you're after waterfowl, quail, thermal hog, even alligator hunts, Rusty Hook Ranch has it all. And don't forget about their top-tier Matagorda Bay fishing charters. And just load up your friends, bring your clients, let the boys at Rusty Hook Ranch take care of everything from five-star lodging, skeet shooting and sporting clays to a fully stocked bass pond. And your weekend here will be one you won't soon forget. And if you need a place for team building, family reunions, weddings, or other events, Rusty Hook Ranch can sleep large groups up to 40 or host events for up to 300 people. So why wait? Experience the best of Texas at Rusty Hook Ranch. Book your adventure today at RustyHookRanch.com. That's RustyHookRanch.com. And tell them Captain Mickey sent you.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. It's 5:18 here in the Bayou City. All right, Lynn, we are back.
Yeah, that was a real experience hunting in New Mexico on that hunt, I'll tell right. you. Man, that was my last hunt like that. I said, I'd rather hunt in Texas, I guarantee you that.
Yes.
Yeah, buddy, South Texas is a lot better than that.
Well, we complain yeah. about the heat down there, but, hey, I'll take that over, you know, belly-deep snow.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, that was something else. Yeah, that hunt was unreal. It was an experience. It really was.
Right.
But, I'll take South Texas any day. And, you know, I saw a lot of elk, but I quit counting at about 350 elk I'd seen. But, you know, it's still, we have a lot more animals than anywhere in this country. We
yeah,
really
South
do.
South Texas is, you know, it's a zoo. You know, it's just.
It is.
I mean, of all species of animals, I mean, it's just a thriving area. It's just.
It is. It really is. And we had a guy came down to the ranch last year, I guess it was. And he came down from like Wisconsin, or the year before last. This guy came down from like Wisconsin and he was a bow hunter, and he had never been to Texas, much less South Texas. And we put him up in a tree and he never shot at a deer. He just sat up in that tree and watched. And when we went and picked him up, said, "Well, what do you think?" He said he got on his phone. He called his wife. He said, "Honey, sell everything. We're moving to Texas." He said, "I've never seen anything like this." He said, "This is unbelievable." He said, "I saw so many big bucks. I couldn't believe it." He said, "I can sit on a stand, and up there where we live, you might sit that stand all season long and never see a deer. Nothing." And he said, "I saw so many bucks in one morning that I've never seen in my life." He said,
well,
"This is incredible."
That's what's so hard, you know, when people that had never hunted South Texas, when they come down, you tell them, "Be patient now. You're going to see a lot of game." And you know, you're going to see a lot of bucks that you would probably shoot from where you're at, but just give it time. And
Be picky. Be picky. Don't
be picky, and it's so hard for them because they're
I know. I had a guy, a little old buck walked out. You know, it's a young deer, you know, about a 2-year-old buck, and he was reaching for his rifle. And I said, "What are you doing?" "Oh, it's a buck. I said, "Hold on, you don't want to shoot that deer." "Oh, you don't think so?" I said, no, you don't want to shoot that. It's too young. That's a young deer." "Oh, okay." And he put his rifle back in the corner of the blind.
Right.
You know, they just don't know. You know, they've never seen deer like that. You
no.
know, they just never no. have. And you know, and there again too, you get a lot of people that are used to hunting up in East Texas, not East Texas, but the Hill Country, and they're used to seeing smaller racks. This was years ago. I had, you know, a hunter that he hunted up in the Hill Country on a lease that they never killed a big deer on that lease. And when he saw, we were going to shoot management deer, and when he saw eight pointers, I mean, he just flipped out. And he said, "I can shoot that deer." I said, "Well, yeah, that's a management buck." "Oh, my goodness."
That'd be a personal best for him, probably.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
There was no doubt about it. Yeah. I had, we had some wounded warriors that we took, and I had a wounded warrior, and there was an eight pointer and a nine point in the Sendera. And I said, "All right, you want to shoot that nine point? He is a cull. He's a management deer." I said, "Go ahead and shoot that nine point. He's got a little kicker." And I said, "Go, you can shoot that nine." And he said, okay. Well, he lined up and everything, and boom, you know. And the 9-point ran over to the edge of the Sendero and stood there and looked back. I said, you missed him. He said, no, I didn't. I said, yeah, you did. You missed him. He said, no, he's laying there in the Sendero. He shot the 8-pointer.
Uh-oh.
And I said, well, you shot the wrong deer. He said, I did? I said, yeah.
He said, yeah, he probably didn't see that kicker.
He didn't. And he said, well, you won't tell my buddies, will you? I said, no, I won't tell them. But anyway, but the 8-pointer was a good deer. I mean, he was good, too.
Sure.
But he shot the wrong one. So anyway, but it was a good 8-point. So he was happy, you know. But that was funny. He said, you won't tell my buddies, will you? I said, no, I won't tell them. That was funny. But anyway, no, I hate that it's going to be so hot, but this weekend, because I've got a couple that's coming down, and we're going to try to get them a couple of does for sure.
Right.
I don't think that's going to be a problem, but we'll just have to get them early or late, you know. But we'll just see. We'll get them.
Preferably early morning hunts.
Yeah,
that way, if one's crippled, you can find it. You don't have to go out there in the dark and look for it.
Right. Well, hopefully we won't cripple any. But we've got some stands that are pretty close shots and pretty easy shots. I just hope we can see some good mature ones and pop some good ones. Right now, it's kind of hard to find a mature one, you know.
Yes.
Kind of thin them out. I think we killed about 75 so far. So,
man, that's
we
a
need
lot.
To kill about.
So how many more you got to kill?
I think about 25 more.
Lord, that might be hard to do, not kill young ones, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, you're trying to kill mature ones, but there again, the mature ones are kind of hiding from the bucks, you know.
They're shell shocked.
Back.
They've been getting run for over a month, just harassed big time.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're hiding in the brush, hiding from those bucks, you know. You know it.
Oh,
and they're still hiding. Yeah, those bucks are running them.
There's still a lot of chasing activity going on at Blaine still. I mean, they're quail hunting and still seeing big deer, man. It's unreal.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll go on into February into March, probably.
Yeah.
It'll happen. But like I said, some of these bucks are already dropping their horns. I think I told you before, I had a lease that I'd gotten on down in Zapata. And I wanted to move a feeder off a lease I had down in Hondo. And so I went to Hondo to get a feeder off that lease. And I went over there Thanksgiving weekend. And I went to move this feeder, and there was a fresh shed laying underneath the feeder. Thanksgiving weekend.
That early. That's crazy.
That early, yeah. Now, you know, they may have knocked it off fighting or something, but it was a fresh shed. Yeah, that was early.
Just one side or what?
Yeah, just one side.
Yeah. Man.
But you never know. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah,
buddy of mine said he saw.
Go ahead.
Buddy of mine saw a nice buck last week. He said that was a real good deer, but he only had one side of his horns. The other side was gone. So, you know, he might have lost it fighting, or he might have just shook it off, you know?
Yeah, Blaine had one guy shoot a really big 10 when he sent me the picture of it. His G2, I think, on his left mane was broke off, and his G3 on his right mane was broken off.
Hmm.
He'd been getting after it. And boy, he had, you know, scars all over his side of his head and his nose.
Mm-hmm.
Been getting it on, man.
I think I sent you a video of one that a real nice buck, and when he turned to the side, you could see he was really beat up, cut up on his left shoulder, left front shoulder.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember seeing that, yeah.
Yeah, he was cut up pretty bad. I had a, I saw a buck that had been fighting, and I was going back to the lodge one day, and this buck was walking parallel to me, parallel to the road, and he literally was probably 10 yards from me and just walking along, had his tongue hanging out, and he had a chunk of meat hanging off his rump, just hanging off of him.
Oh, he got gored in the butt.
Yeah, he did. And he was just walking along like nothing ever happened, but he had his tongue hanging out. He was worn slap out. He had really, and he was a big 10 point, big 10. I said, man, I want to see the buck that whipped him, you know.
I saw a 10 point one time that had had his eyeball gored out.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, smoothed over, and he was living like that. You can tell it happened the year before or 2 years before that. Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're tougher
yeah.
than we think they are. They really are.
Oh, they are. Yeah, they are. Yeah, and we've seen that, too. And, you know, we killed one good deer that came limping up to the feeder, and the guy that shot him said, you know, I figured he was a crippled up deer, and it went ahead and shot him. And it was a snake bite. And I think I may have sent you that picture of that deer's leg, but the fang marks on that deer's leg were pretty white. I mean, that was a pretty big snake that hit him.
Oh, I bet it was. You get a lot of distance between the two marks. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you that picture.
That water moccasin, it popped the last lab I had right under the nose. And, man, those fang marks were wide apart. That was a big moccasin that hit her.
Well, this was a pretty good rattlesnake that hit this deer.
I bet you.
I mean, yeah. And it was pretty swollen. But, yeah, it's amazing how they can get over it, though, you know. But you
can
see
some of these deer. You know, I've never seen one in the wild. But, you know, I've seen videos, you know, like on TV, all these hunting shows. I saw a woman shoot a deer couple of weeks ago on some show, and that thing had a tumor on the left side underneath the chest there. It was bigger than a basketball. I couldn't believe that. Wonder what causes that.
Man, I don't know. I saw a deer like that one time.
Did you?
Wasn't that big.
Right.
Wasn't that big, but yeah. It was a weird deal. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But
well, like, you know, they come up on dogs and they're like a fatty tumor, you know, just it's not malignant. It's not anything to worry about with dogs, but you get them checked at the vet, said, oh, that's part of being an old dog.
Yeah. We had a doe that had a white spot on her back, and this white spot was about 6 inches in diameter. And it was raised up about an inch. It was like a big hump, but it was a white spot, like a round white spot. And needless to say, we called her Spot, you know. And nobody would shoot her. We said, nobody shoot Spot. And she lived for 10 or more years. And every year she'd have twins. Every year. Huh. But she had that spot on her back, and it looked almost like a tumor. I don't know what you'd call it, but it was weird looking.
You know, I've seen them, you know, where somebody's grazed one, you know, shot them high like that, and then they heal back over, and then it leaves a white area, but there's no hair on it. You know, it's just smooth.
Well, Well, this had a hair on it.
That had hair on it. Yeah, that's strange.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And it was white. But it was raised up.
Marcus Poffenberger years ago sent me a picture of they cleaned a deer for somebody. Somebody had shot a deer and brought it in. And when they cleaned it inside the shoulder there, when they were cutting the deer up, they found a broadhead in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Where it met the bone and didn't pass through, and that deer just grew around it. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, they're tough, I tell you.
They are tough.
Pretty
tough. Tough.
Yeah, they're pretty tough.
All right, let me knock this break out. I'll be right back at you, buddy.
All right, man.
Well, folks, if you're going fishing, well, don't. Not till you've been to the 50th Annual Houston Fishing Show. That's coming up February 12th through the 16th. It'll be held at the George R. Brown Convention Center. And, folks, we're talking everything for fishermen. All the new rods, reels, lures, factory reps there to answer all your questions, show you new product. And they have guides from Alaska to South America on hand, booking trips and dozens of fully rigged boats, hundreds of kayaks, and daily clinics by expert fishermen covering salt and fresh water. And don't forget about their special kids clinic they have every Saturday and Sunday. It's a good way to get the kids out, and they'll leave with a lot of goodies. So if you love to fish or just want to learn more about fishing, don't miss the 50th Annual Houston Fishing Show. That's February 12th through the 16th at the George R. Brown Convention Center. Check it out at HoustonFishingShow.com. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. It's 537 here in the Bayou City. All right, Liam, we're back, my friend.
Yes, sir. Anyway, back to these deer. We're gonna try to harvest a few more does, I think. But season just about over.
Yeah.
I think we just about got all we're gonna get for the year.
Well,
it's about done for the year. But I think we just about got all we're gonna get. We normally get 9,000 acres. They normally take about pretty close to what the biologist, you know, wants us to take. And, I mean, there's years that we do get them all, but mostly we get up to pretty close to what they ask for.
Yeah, and, how does that work? You know, I know y'all are low-fence ranch and all that, but you're MLD.
Yeah.
And
right.
Now, do they penalize you if you don't take the amount of game off there that they require you to? How does that work?
No, as long as you get real close. I mean, as long as we get pretty close, yeah.
Right.
That's the main thing. I mean, you know, they did the final survey, but the final survey didn't show much, but they did the survey at noontime one day, and it was warm. There again, the deer were laying down.
Right, they were
so they didn't get a good count. Yeah. They didn't get a good count, and when they did the survey, then they loaded everything up. They went to the ranch next door in the afternoon when it cooled off, and they got a great count. You know, so you know, they just did the count at the wrong time.
Well, and y'all had weather issues too, where they couldn't fly the helicopter a couple of times. I remember y'all went through all that.
Oh yeah,
too.
Heck, I think they canceled it about three times.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's the problem.
That doesn't help. Yeah,
no, that doesn't help at all. And you just got to hit it right. I wish they'd do the survey like in October. You know, that's get it early, get it done early.
Right.
But they count everything. You know, they count everything. They even count coveys of quail.
Really.
You know,
cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They count coveys of quail. They count javelinas. They count, you know, pigs. They count everything. And then we go back to the ranch house and tally everything up. But, and they even on those bucks, like, you know, if you're sitting in the helicopter and I'm on one side, the biologist is usually on the other side. And, if I see a good buck on my side, I say, well, you know, there's a good one over here to the right. Well, I mean, that pilot just zooms down on the right side, you know,
right.
and get on top of that deer. Well, they get pictures of it. That biologist will take, you know, two or three pictures of that deer, and then we'll get off of him, you know. They don't want to run him. And then when we get back to the ranch house, they usually try to more or less score him, too. They score him and see what kind of score that deer would be.
Yeah.
And because when they did that survey the other day, the ranch manager said, you know, he said, we didn't even see one trophy deer. one trophy buck. And I said, well, that's crazy, because I know for a fact at one stand, there's five, you know, that I know of. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, heck, at this other stand, he said, there's one at this other stand that's one heck of a deer, you know. There's one deer there that, man, I tell you what, I like those deer that are unique, you know, unique horns. And I mean, this one deer, I saw him twice, that I would love to have that deer for a trophy. He's got a third main beam coming off, and it comes straight out like a unicorn, more or less, you know, and it comes out about a foot, and it's heavy. It's a heavy horn that comes straight out. And I'd love to have that deer. And he was a big old deer too. Yeah, he's heavy horned. And he's probably in the 160s, you know, 160 class. So he's a good deer. I saw in one day, one morning, and I had a customer with him, and we were going to shoot management deer. And I bet you we saw four or five deer, 160 plus, on this one stand.
Man.
So, you know, that's...
Yeah.
Oh, it was on, you know. They're there. They didn't get big by being stupid, you know.
No, and, blaming them, they had their best year ever, you know. 42 mm-hmm. years he's been down there, but he got a rut during deer season. I finally got a real rut, you know, instead of it, you know, horn season being over and then, the big bucks start coming out of the woodwork because, you know, the later it gets in the year in the rut, you know, the bigger bucks you're going to see naturally. They know. I mean, they've been breeding does for years. They're experienced.
Yeah. Like I say, they just kind of lay up and, you know, they let the younger deer run the does.
It's like Friday and Saturday nights at Gillies, man, you know.
They let them wear them down.
That's it.
Yeah. But, later in the season, it's crazy. Yeah. You know, mid to late February, I've seen some monster bucks.
That's what Blaine tells me all the time. They'll see them when they're quail hunting. They just can't believe it. So where's that deer been all year?
Yeah, you never see them before, you know. I was sitting in a stand mid to late February one year, and just I remember we were going to shoot does or whatever, or just, you know, predator hunting.
Yeah.
And I heard something behind me, and I just turned around and looked, and there was a 12 and a 14, big massive bucks chasing a doe, back and forth. Yeah.
That late.
Just back and forth, chasing this one doe.
Oh.
And they had big old heavy horns on them, you know. And you go, where did they come from? You know,
right.
Where have they been all season, you know? Oh, man, I had a pop-up stand sitting over by a pond one day and back behind this pond in the brush. And I heard these two bucks getting it on, man. I heard them fighting, and I mean, they were getting it on, but I couldn't see them, and I thought, oh man, and they were tearing it up, and all of a sudden they broke up, and I saw them run across this field, and I mean, they were horses, boy. They were big, heavy chocolate horn bucks, and I'd never seen them before, and never saw them again, you know. They just showed up out of nowhere.
I know, and those massive deer. They're like ghosts, man.
They are. They come out of nowhere and disappear. We've got this one area there that we call Deer Valley, and we don't hunt in that area. And it's like a sanctuary for them. And you need that on a ranch anyway.
Right.
You need a sanctuary where they can go and not be disturbed, you know. But
kind of like a roost pond for waterfowl, you know.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yep. You need a sanctuary. And man, there's some old mossback bucks in there.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
You know there are.
I promise you.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, I can send you some videos of a couple of bucks that we saw from the helicopter. And one of them in particular I really like is laying down, and he won't even get up, you know. He's laying down looking up at us in the helicopter.
Oh.
And he won't even get up. Yeah.
But, well, he wasn't going to leave his bed in the area.
No. I mean, you don't even bother them, you know.
Oh, you know, it's amazing when you get to tracking a deer, you know, you're looking for a crippled deer. You get back in that, you know, that thick brush and all the deer trails through there. All the little just arteries of trails going through all that thick stuff where they can, you know, they just go in there and disappear.
Yeah. And you wonder how they do it with that rack and everything.
Yeah, how they get through and under some of that brush and... But, I mean, it's just solid footprints and deer excrement everywhere. You can tell that, you know, after they feed and they leave the feeders, all these little avenues they got to go wherever they go to bed down, man, and lay up during the day.
I was tracking a deer one time, and I lost the trail, and I stood in that one spot, and I thought, surely he didn't go under all this heavy cat claw and all that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, and he must have gone to the left or gone to the right. And I went both directions and nothing. I couldn't find any blood or anything. And I went right back to my spot where that trail, that little trail, went under all that cat claw and everything. And I thought, you got to be kidding. That deer surely didn't go under all that with that rack. No way. And finally, I had other guys out there looking for that deer. And I finally just said, okay. I got down on my hands and knees and crawled underneath that cat claw and everything and for about probably 5 yards, at least 5 yards. And when I came out of that cat claw, when I got out of it and got clear of it and raised up, he was laying there.
Big
he was
open,
laying,
he's laying
out there.
In. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, how do they do that? I mean, I don't know.
Run to their safe space to die. That's crazy how they do it. They're just
it is.
They do it wide open too.
Yeah, they lay that head back. I've seen them do that.
Yeah.
Well, they lay that head back, lay those horns back, and they run through that brush. I've seen elk do it too. Well, they lay those head back and they run through those aspens, and you can hear them go click 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 like that. But they sure do it, you know. But, man, it's amazing how they can lay those horns back and run through that brush.
Well, just like a dog, you know, when they're running through thicket stuff, you know, that's what their whiskers on their snouts are for, is to fend off objects.
Huh. Man, I tell you, amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I hunted doves over on the island one day with a friend of mine from here, and I took my lab over there, which I shouldn't have done because there's so many rattlesnakes over there.
Yeah, that thing's covered with snakes, man.
Oh, it is. But he'd been de-snaked several times. But anyway, we were coming back, and we were in this buddy of mine's Mountie, and my dog was sitting between us, and my buddy looks down and he said, "Hey," he says, "look at Blue." And old Blue, my old black lab, he was sitting there he was just happy as a lark, and he had cactus thorns sticking out all over his face. he was just happy as he could be. Boy, he'd had a great day picking up doves, but he had cactus thorns all in his face. Took a week for me to get them all out.
Oh, man, years ago I took one of my labs down to Blaine's, and we quail hunted with her and dove hunted and all that, and you know, that dog got sick from all the cactus in her that I had to pull out of her, you know, out of her legs and her snout. I mean, you know, she was just covered in it.
And,
and she laid up for 2 days, just didn't feel good. It's like she had a fever from it.
Oh, it'll make them sick. It will. Yeah.
And then I look at those other dogs that stay down there all the time. That's all they do is hunt, and they're immune to it. They're tough.
Well, yeah.
They'll get back, and you'll see them with their teeth pulling thorns out of them, you know, and cactus spines.
Oh, yeah.
Licking their wounds, man.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. Yeah, this friend of mine and his wife were down there in South Texas, and they were quail hunting. And they're driving down to Sendero. They were in the back of a pickup that had a headache rack on it. And they were standing up in the back of the truck. And they looked ahead of them. They saw a big patch of cactus. And they saw a quail fly out of that patch of cactus. Well, he beat on the cab of the truck. And he said, hey, he told the guy driving, he said, when you get up to that big patch of cactus, he said, slow down. He said, a quail just came out of there. And the guy said, okay. So the guy slowed down, and they go driving up that big patch of cactus. About that time, a bunch of quail flushed out of that cactus, and a big rattlesnake came out of that cactus in midair and grabbed a quail in midair.
Wow.
In midair. He said that snake had to be 6 or 7 feet long.
My gosh.
He grabbed a quail in midair right in front of him. And he said he got out of the truck, and he knelt down and looked under that cactus, and that snake was coiled up, so it looked like a foot high, you know.
Wow.
Under that cactus. He said he just shot in that cactus. I said, did you drag him out? He said, heck no.
No.
He said, we just left him. Just left him in there.
Vipers.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
no telling how long that snake was.
Buddy of Blaine's got popped on the top of the hand reaching down to pick up a quail. But he got lucky, he got a drive back because that snake had already hit that coil with it. You know, he shot a coil in the brush, and you know how they'll flutter when they're crippled a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
And, I guess that snake was right there close and then popped that coil. And then when he reached down there to pick it up, pop, he got popped right on top of the hand. Drive by, got lucky, man.
I always reach down there with my foot, and I always kind of rough around there with my foot. Before I ever reached down to pick up a dove.
That's probably the last time this guy reached down to pick one up like that.
I bet.
Need to carry those. You know those new deals they got for old people? My wife got me one. It's great for like picking up trash out by the road. People throw stuff out of cars.
Yeah.
What do you call those things? It's called a gopher.
Yeah.
They fold out and you can pick all kinds of. That's what I'd use. Reach in there and pick them up with a gopher.
I think I told you we were dove hunting in Mexico one time, and we were about 35, 40 miles in, and we were standing next to a field, a milo field, and right along the edge of a brush line, and we were trying to drop the doves right in front of us, you know. Well, I shot one, and it fell a little bit into the brush line behind me. And I just kind of walked over there, and I looked in. Well, like you said, that dove was fluttering, you know, but he was only about 6 feet inside the brush.
Right.
And I looked in there, and I could see that dove laying there fluttering. And something just told me, don't just walk in there and grab that dove, you know.
No.
And I had a 20-gauge, and I stuck that 20-gauge down in that brush and just pulled it away. And there was a rattlesnake coiled up looking at that dove fluttering.
Wow.
If I'd have reached in there and grabbed that dove, he'd have popped me for sure.
I promise you. You'd have got nailed.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just popped him.
Well, yeah. Let's warm up. They ought to be coming out this week. You know,
yeah,
right
buddy.
Now, next week for sure.
I'll be wearing my snake boots when I open the gate. Trust me on that.
Quail hunters better beware.
You better know it. Yeah, they're going to be out for sure.
Well, it's an unbelievable quail season. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you, this has been the best season I've seen in a long time.
It has, hasn't it? Man, it just, you know, South Texas, remember early in the spring, late winter, early spring, and into the early summer, they were getting all the rain, and we weren't up this way.
Oh,
usually
yeah.
Usually it's just the opposite. They're dry, and we're wet. And it worked out perfect for them. Everything came together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it was a perfect time. Perfect time. And the quail were just running everywhere you looked, a quail.
Yes.
Young quail, you know. And so they had a real good hatch. I don't know how many hatches they had. But
Blaine thinks he had three or four. And he thinks the dove had three hatches also.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it a bit.
All right.
I don't doubt it.
Hey, well, good luck on your doe hunting this week. Hope y'all get what you need. Take care of business. And if somebody wants to call you about fishing with you this spring, how they get a hold of you?
Well, they give me a 361 935-6833. I'm ready to start, man. We're fixing to get after it. I'll be at the fishing show.
That's coming up. It's right around the corner.
All right, man. I'll be doing a seminar there on Saturday, so I'll be there.
All right, brother. Lynn, have a good one. Always good talking to you, buddy. See you, man.
You too, man. You have a good one, Mick.
Later, bud. All right, it's time for our top of the hour break, national anthem, all that good stuff. You're listening to The Outdoor Show. We'll be right back.